Olá, eu sou Vera Appleton, diretora da Appleton, um centro de arte no bairro de Alvalade, em Lisboa. Neste podcast vamos ouvir o que vários convidados ligados à arte contemporânea têm a dizer acerca da sua atividade e de questões com ela relacionadas. A Appleton é uma associação sem fins lucrativos com o apoio mecenático da HCI Construções, A2P, My Story Hotels e JD Collection. Desde 2020 conta com o financiamento da Câmara Municipal de Lisboa e desde abril de 2024 com o financiamento da República Portuguesa, DG Artes. Desde 2009, a prática artística de Robert Wiley tem ganho forma através da Unidade de Investigação Interdisciplinar VICART, Vidro e Cerâmica para as Artes, da Faculdade de Ciências e Tecnologia da Universidade Nova de Lisboa, Nova FCT, dedicada a aproximar a prática artística da investigação científica. Nascido nos Estados Unidos, considera hoje Portugal como seu país e a sua nacionalidade. O trabalho de Wiley envolve frequentemente o vidro, um material cuja complexidade técnica constitui um centro meditativo para grande parte da sua investigação criativa e conceptual. A sua prática atual é impulsionada não apenas pelos desafios materiais e científicos inerentes ao vidro, mas também por preocupações mais amplas da vida contemporânea, questionando hierarquias atuais de saber e de produção artística que moldarão o património cultural de amanhã. Wiley é doutorada em Artes Plásticas e Escultura pela Universidade do Porto e possui também um MFA e um BFA em Vidro pela Ohio State University. Na VICART contribui como professor assistente convidado e como investigador, participando em projetos que vão desde a arqueometria do vidro à reconstrução histórica e à ciência da conservação, até à exploração de novos materiais à base de vidro desenvolvidos na unidade de investigação. O seu trabalho situa-se na interseção entre arte, ciência e materialidade, refletido um interesse continuado na relação entre formas discursivas e não discursivas de conhecimento, aquilo que podemos raciocinar e articular versus aquilo que compreendemos através do fazer e da experiência incorporada. A obra do Wiley foi exibida internacionalmente na Ásia, Europa e América do Norte. A sua produção artística e escrita estende-se a temas que envolvem subjetividade, cognição centrada no corpo e o valor pedagógico da prática criativa. A sua abordagem interdisciplinar informa naturalmente a sua exploração material e os seus processos experimentais, nos quais tanto o artesanato sofisticado como a recolha infantil têm posições de igual importância, meditativa, profundamente pessoal e por vezes enigmática. A sua prática procura perguntas em vez de tentar oferecer respostas. Olá, Robert, muito bem-vindo.
Olá.
Ao podcast da Appleton. O Robert vai falar em inglês porque é a sua língua materna, apesar de saber falar perfeitamente português. Então começo pelo teu percurso. Nasceste nos Estados Unidos, mas há muitos anos que vives e trabalhas em Portugal, dizes que consideras a tua nacionalidade, muito ligada à VICART, a Unidade de Investigação da Nova FCT, que, como dizia na bio, aproxima a prática artística da investigação científica sobre materiais como o vidro. A tua formação também passa pela escultura e pelo estudo de vidro na Ohio State University. Como é que foste construindo este percurso entre arte, investigação e ensino? E de que forma esse contexto interdisciplinar acabou por moldar a tua prática artística?
Great question. I'll try to tie all the pieces together. To begin with, I think art was something that I've done in all my life. My earliest memories begin with fishing.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the small details that go into that, boxes with little bits and pieces, tying the lines, these things, they began pulling at me from the earliest age. Later, after high school, I went to work with my father in civil engineering, in construction, mm-hmm. particularly heavy highway construction. He said, if you don't go to university, you go to work. So I had 2 days off after high school, and then I went to work. Very quickly, I decided I didn't want to be an engineer, and I would go study art. Mm-hmm. I remember a video from National Geographic called National Living Treasures of Japan. And here we saw people that were held as treasures of the country. So they were held in a particular esteem. And I saw things like pottery and kabuki theater, making kimonos, paper making. And so rattling around in my visual memory during those years of working in construction, I thought about these videos from the ceramics class that I took in high school. I was taking art courses in high school as well. And so I went to Ohio State. I looked into it and found my way to the ceramics department before quickly moving into the sculpture area, then finding glass. And so I spent extra years at Ohio State doing both sculpture and glass,
okay.
Majoring in glass in the end. Then, after a number of years in the private sector and teaching, I taught at Ohio State University as an invited visiting artist, they call that there.
How many years did you teach?
Off and on. I began teaching in graduate school. The MFA, the Master of Fine Art, is the terminal degree in the United States and in some other countries, but particularly in the U.S. for being an art professor. Mm. While I was studying there, I was hired by the university to teach during my undergraduate, so during the Bachelor of Fine Arts, the BFA, I was assisting the Introduction to Hot Glass course. Then I returned as a graduate teaching associate, so I was teaching at Ohio State while I was studying my MFA. There in the United States, it's a little bit different than the models here in Europe. A much more competitive course to get into these MFA programs, but it's because they also give you funding, so you get paid to teach 20 hours a week. I taught foundations courses. I opted out of the glass courses because I had already had that experience in undergraduate. So I can't even remember, but I would say probably in the United States between the undergraduate teaching, graduate associate teaching, and then later invitations to places like the New York State College of Ceramics at Alfred University, doing summer sessions as well, and teaching glassmaking in a public access glass studio. Gosh, I don't know. This has been going on now for, I guess, 30 years.
Okay. Agora vai ser estranho porque eu falo em português, mas é que o Robert percebe perfeitamente o português. O vidro tem sido um material central no teu trabalho ao longo dos anos. Pelos vistos, começou aí, não é? Começou em Ohio. É um material tecnicamente muito exigente, com uma forte dimensão científica, desde a composição até aos processos de transformação, mas ao mesmo tempo extremamente sensível ao gesto, ao tempo, à experiência direta do fazer. Muitas vezes falas do vidro quase como um espaço de concentração ou de meditação dentro da prática. O que é que te continua a atrair neste material depois de tantos anos a trabalhar com ele?
One thing that keeps me excited is this opportunity that's grown over the last 16 years here in Portugal, because I entered into this research unit, VICART, Vidro e Cerâmica para as Artes, the VICART research unit, as a strange series of coincidences that started with a phone call in the middle of the night on a weekend when I was fishing in my boat in Ohio in a reservoir.
I start there?
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
Well, a good friend, someone who I consider a professor and friend and colleague, Michael Rogers, called me in the middle of the night. I was working in the private sector for a number of years and had been thinking it was time to get out. The money's nice, but the creativity becomes problematic because of the amount of pressure on us, especially in North America, to make money. And that phone call introduced this idea that something interesting was happening in Portugal. So this became a conversation that went on for a few years, with the program being opened on paper before then the Bologna Accords of Education in Europe coming into effect, and this program never actually getting off the ground, the Master of Glass and Ceramics Art and Science at VICART. But eventually, in 2009, I met with Antonio Pires de Matos, Marcia Villarigas, Fernando Quintas, a number of people from here in Lisbon, at the International Glass Art Society Conference in New York, where in June they said, if you want to come, they had already done an international search, and I was apparently their
first
character,
yeah.
Victim or volunteer, I don't know.
Oh, that's great.
But it was something that went on for years. So I think the 12th of June in 2009, on the 18th of July, I received a contract in the mail. The 24th of August, I was here. And I sold my motorcycle, my car, got rid of my boat. Luckily, the house I was living in was rented, so there was no challenge that way, because in a matter of 2 months, I left my position at a commercial art factory, we could call it, and came here. I didn't understand how much the introduction to conservation and restoration sciences, and the science behind glass as a material would invigorate my making. So the question was, you know, what keeps me excited about glass? Yeah. You know, partially, it has a lot to do with being here in Portugal and seeing glass in a new way. There's the challenge of the material, which, as you mentioned, it's a meditative act. One has to become aware of their body and space in ways that don't have anything to do with what I would call the day-to-day being, right? Mm-hmm. Quotidian life doesn't prepare us for things like glass, this weird kind of material that moves between, you know, maybe warm honey and a stone, sometimes in seconds, you know, like in under a minute, we can move between this liquid and this solid characteristic, or I can't call it a state because it's not a state of matter. But that kind of transformation then requires us to really control technically our bodies and the tools that we're using if we're working with glass by hand. And that's been one of the areas that I've concentrated on. That's glass blowing. Mm-hmm. I also work with glass in casting, lost wax casting, traditional sculpting techniques. But glass is a material like stone, it's a material like liquid, it's a material like so many other things, and only glass. So when you add to that material challenge, then also the new culture of science relative to glass and understanding the science and technology of glass in a way that I didn't learn in art school, that really pushes it up to
another
level. Whole other level. Absolutely, absolutely.
Há uma dualidade muito interessante na tua prática que eu acho que tem a ver com a pergunta anterior, não é? Quando nós falamos, o vidro tem essa dualidade, o próprio vidro, não é? Do lado sensível, mas ao mesmo tempo é frágil, mas é absolutamente definitivo, não é? Quer dizer, é um gesto que depois é definitivo. E eu sinto essa dualidade também na tua prática. Por um lado, o rigor, o conhecimento técnico de alguém que trabalha muito próximo da ciência dos materiais e da investigação académica. E, por outro, um lado muito intuitivo, muito sensorial, até meditativo, tu falas muito sobre isso, na forma como as esculturas que tu trabalhas se desenvolvem. Como é que estas duas dimensões convivem no estúdio, no teu estúdio, na tua cabeça, em ti? São forças em tensão ou fazem parte do mesmo processo? Como é que esta dualidade funciona?
Well, I would like to imagine that it's really not a duality.
It's not.
That instead, although it makes sense for words, right?
Okay.
For conversation,
yeah.
To kind of describe the centers of these activities as distinct. But ultimately, in the end, I think they're not.
Yeah.
And it was through the study of glass in the condition of the Department of Conservation and Restoration, mm-hmm. that I really began to see that the values that were in modernity, essentially, mm-hmm. that created these kind of grand monolithic dualities that were in competition with each other, that in fact those were leading to impossibilities in terms of my practice.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, where the mind is valued extremely more so than the hand, let's say in academics, in knowledge creation, or in the value of what is art and what is craft, you know, the body on the other side is all I really need in the moment of making. Because while I'm making, it is this meditative act where the materials are guiding me, where my body's guiding me. So navigating these two things eventually becomes something to try not to do, mm-hmm. but to instead just exist. I mean, it probably sounds, you know, kind of zen, and perhaps studying
just
Buddhist art history,
yeah.
has something to do with it. But it's, yeah, I don't think it's two separate things. It just works that way for words.
And for us, maybe for the people that are outside looking at your work, maybe we can find that, and we can think about that, because nós vamos entrar na tua exposição e aí falaremos mais, mas sentes essa coisa que é, tu dominas completamente uma matéria e dominas quase de uma maneira que é académica também, não é? Tu dominas o material, nós sentimos isso, a maneira como eu te vi remontar a escultura e tu tive a observar-te, mas por outro lado há uma sensibilidade e há uma beleza de, como é que eu ia te explicar, de intuição e de... Percebes o que eu estou a dizer? Estás a fazer aquilo com conhecimento técnico, mas ao mesmo tempo estás a fazer aquilo com uma intuição. Faz sentido o que tu dizes, as duas coisas estão ligadas, não é? Estão completamente ligadas. Mas nós vemo-las, nós conseguimos distingui-las, entendes?
Uh-huh, uh-huh, I do. You know, one thing that's funny is glass... Well, as one of my former students said, glass is not an easy material to domesticate.
Right?
So to dominate glass is not a possibility. Yeah. In fact, it's the most challenging material I've worked with, and I've worked with numbers of them. And I don't resist any material when curiosity, you know, drags me in that direction. And it really is a kind of a restlessness and a pull through material. But I think people probably, you know, they certainly talk about seeing both these sides,
mm-hmm.
where on the one hand there may be a high level of technical fit and finish and mm-hmm. putting these things together, but then I might also be using materials that don't have necessarily an inherent value.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, weaving things together, tying them together with the small knot or the bit of wire or those things that harken back to mm-hmm. to my youth and fishing. You know, those things, they require a level of completeness, that a cabamento,
si.
Right? So that finish is one that can simultaneously be, you know, technically evident in the mm-hmm. material. You can mm-hmm. you can see that. Okay, there's care given there. And then at the same time, something else might be happening organically, like the way that glass
mm-hmm.
responds, especially when hot, to the motion or the action. You know, if you touch it, there's a memory. This material glass, particularly the glasses that we know, because actually glass is a wider definition
yeah.
than we could talk about today, but it freezes time. So when glass, which appears as I say an important central part of my practice, although it might not be by weight or mm-hmm. by volume
mm-hmm.
the central part, its characteristics also, there's a sort of organicness to it in its inorganic nature. So
okay,
it's between those places too.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of, you know, poetic you know, liminal space or between our definitions where poetry happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's there. I think people talk about it.
Yeah. A expressão da Appleton chama-se Build, Branch, Bind. Construir, ramificar, ligar. São três verbos que sugerem ações contínuas, quase processo em curso. Como é que estas ideias aparecem no teu modo de trabalhar e de que forma estruturam as esculturas que apresentas nesta exposição?
So, in the case of this exhibition, and in the case of really all the work I do, where there's some aspect that's going to be improvisational, intuitive, and when I say aspect, I really mean centrally to my process, are things that are not predictable. So beginning with the, you know, the very generous opportunity, the invitation to show here, you know, I have to begin thinking about how can I help Appleton understand what I'm going to do, right? This is a risk for both of us.
Yeah.
So
it's not a risk for us.
Well, okay. But the idea of trying to communicate
mm-hmm.
something previous to the work, and all the work in this exhibition
yeah.
is new, even if components might have been fermenting
yeah.
over some time. So, you know, the first thing I do when thinking about putting words to something is just look at what I'm making, look at what I'm up to. You know, what can I say about this moment in time and space, and what am I doing? I'm building something for Appleton. I'm using some materials like the salgaita, willow.
Willow.
Like willow branches and this kind of rattan, the kind of sticks that are used
mm-hmm.
in a number of places in our world. So this branching, building, and then binding, because things are being bound, and usually in kind of odd ways, where
mm-hmm.
something like sheets of glass that have been bent in the kiln are tied together with, you know, farm material or something that I take out of the garage.
Yeah.
So it just naturally presents itself, but it's what I'm doing in my hands.
Yeah, and on a daily basis, you work with these kind of things. You connect, you bind, you build, you're always doing that. When I visit your space there, I saw some pieces, and it was about that.
That's right. It's a inquietação. It's a restlessness. It's a thing that I don't really control, and it's always fun to be curious with what comes out, and then to reflect, then
mm-hmm.
to think about. But I think, yeah, there's something deeply important to me about tying stuff together. And I imagine that this has something to do with, you know, maybe making the flies with the feathers for fishing or some of these things. But, you know, this gets all the way back, I think, to the heart of the distinctions that we might make etymologically between art and science or art and technology, right? And this is kind of funny because we use technology to mean science, but the etymological roots are quite different.
Yeah.
Art is you know, in Portuguese or in English is coming from the Latin ars,
mm-hmm.
which is from the Greek techne. So technica. Art is on that that techne, right? The mm-hmm. technica. And that comes from the Proto-Indo-European imagined, you know, early language of humans from tech. So that tech is the same for tissue and architect and weaving, to say it in Portuguese. And that is something about giving us abrigo. It's
Shelter.
Thank you. Sometimes I do. Yeah.
I'm translating you. It's funny.
So yeah, that shelter, that tech, is associated with creating shelter,
mm-hmm.
and putting together things like sticks mm-hmm. and mud to create that shelter. Whereas on the science side, it's a ske is an extension of sec, which is to cut, section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So our words like bisect and dissect. So I think this kind of tying thing, that's the artist part of me, binding things together, weaving them together, trying to connect the disparate parts of the world to understand how I exist. Mm-hmm. The other side is the science side for me, is cutting things apart to understand mm-hmm. their components.
Okay. So, nesta exposição vemos vidro, mas também temos madeira, arame, metal, vários fragmentos encontrados ou descartados. Na sinopse fala-se destes materiais quase como colaboradores do processo, cada um trazendo consigo histórias ou vidas anteriores que acabam por influenciar o rumo das peças. Como é que decides que materiais entram no trabalho e de que forma essas histórias ou memórias materiais passam a fazer parte da escultura?
I can't say it's a decision to choose a material. Well,
you can't?
I can't. I cannot.
I can.
I think, although materials that I have near me naturally are the things that I'm going to use. So in this case, glass, working in a research institute of glass and ceramics for the arts, glass is close by. But you know, I think about some of the work today, and things like the linen cord that you might use to bind a box or tie something up in the garden, or a white nylon rope that I've unraveled and combed over and over again until it creates a kind of a furry, fuzzy, you know, material that's a little bit strange because it's simultaneously familiar and unfamiliar because it's been played with, taken out of its context. So these things, they suggest themselves to me. I mean, I have a friend, again, I mentioned him earlier, Michael Rogers, who talked about when we were first together, stealing with your eyes. Right? Or things that have a visual resonance, something that and that doesn't make any sense because it's poetic, right? We can't resonar with our eyes, right? It doesn't make any sense. But it's really that way, I think, for some of us anyways, that are making art or making art in this fashion. So, you know, I then find some enjoyment, maybe in the bend or the twist or whatever it is that I'm doing. And I'm playing intuitively, really in a kind of automatic sense. If something then starts returning or being important, or I see it and I think, oh, this is kind of cool, or I just hang it up on the wall or I put it on a shelf and someone mentions it or people pick it up, I have the luxury of having scientists and artists that are coming through my space. So, you know, I get to do a free sondagem.
You have a lot of feedback of different people.
That's right. And from conservators and historians of art to, you know, designers and artists or material scientists. So that kind of feedback definitely plays into the work. And so if things are curious as well to others, I think maybe I should give that more attention. And there I might spend time thinking of the objects or asking myself how they might look if I do this to them. What mm-hmm. if I put it inside a glass tube? What if I wrap a wire around it? What if I melt mm-hmm. the end or burn the end or, you know, put it next to these other things?
Yeah. Okay. Agora tínhamos que referir o André Alves, não é? No texto, acho que é muito importante, o texto que acompanha a exposição, que descreve as tuas esculturas como geringonças escultóricas que parecem segurar algo informe, fino e passageiro. Ele fala também de redes, linhas e armações que tentam contornar algo que escapa à forma. Mais à frente escreve que estas obras funcionam como artefactos de espera em vez de mira. o looking for em vez de um looking at. Reconheces nessas imagens de estruturas que procuram a guarda ou tentam dar contorno a algo muito difícil de fixar? E já agora falarmos um bocadinho do texto do André Alves, que foi uma grande surpresa para nós. Tivemos a questão da tradução, não foi? Para pensar. Pronto, a pergunta e depois falar um bocado sobre o texto.
Ok, ok. Yeah, well, the text from André Alves was
very special.
Yeah, for me very very special and generous, and a level of sensitivity about me and about the words that he chose to use. Yeah. That
that's poetic.
And of course, when it comes to trying to translate that into English, it's never really going to work. But you know, it's always interesting to me to hear. In fact, I guess. You know, after the personal, selfish interaction with material and making that is my life as an artist. I mean, it's all for me at the beginning. You know, then the next thing is, well, what does someone else have to say about this? And so, you know, seeing, reading what André had written, you know, was really, really, really nice. And I think that way of describing art reading, art interpreting, art experiencing, is really the most honest way to think about it. Yeah. Because I think if we're really doing our job as artists, we're not going to be easily pinned down. Or if we're doing a good job, you know, the work is going to exist between definitions. So, you know, when one requires words in a poetic sense to paint a place that is also about feeling as much as it is about an idea, then that's what we're supposed to do. I think that's the difference between, let's say, art and design or art and engineering that I've done. Mm-hmm. I was tickled to read that text, to have, you know, people that are native Portuguese speakers, you know, send me messages to say, wow, what a wonderful text, you know, and they wanted to know about André Alves.
Yeah, because it's not a normal text that we find in the nas folhas de sala, não é? Das exposições, não é um texto diferente, não é? Um texto tem essa componente mais poética, mais subjetiva, mas ao mesmo tempo diz coisas muito perceptíveis, ou seja, não é codificado como às vezes tantos textos são, apesar de ser, se calhar, muito mais sofisticado.
I couldn't have been happier about that either, because, you know, I maybe it requires the reader, the viewer, to do a little work,
mm-hmm.
right?
But it's not.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, for me, what better way to offer something in writing than to have something poetic? Because an explanation for me bangs against some of my ideas or conflicts or challenges that I have with the academic world, where we try so hard to quantify,
explain everything.
We can't sit with uncertainty. We can't just, you know, be in a tense moment. We want to have this certainty in an uncertain universe, and it's not there. It's just fiction. So to offer a text as André did, that is poetic. You know, I feel like, well, that's the most honest thing to put in the room with this work, right? I think it works to interact with the work. It's working. It's there doing something.
Like another part of your exhibition. Like it's like a piece.
Exactly. I mean, he gave us a work of art, mm-hmm. in that exhibition, and ultimately, you know, this is where we exist, in a place connected, right? Mm-hmm. In an ecology of practice, of life. And so everything is acting on us, and we're acting on everything. So for me, it makes perfect sense to not have a discrete object that tells people, the viewer, what this work is.
Yeah.
Instead, it also, it complements it. So it shapes our experience with the work as well.
Yeah. Ao longo do teu percurso, tens trabalhado muito próximo de contextos académicos e científicos, mas ao mesmo tempo o teu trabalho parece resistir a uma certa necessidade de explicar ou justificar a arte através do discurso. Vai ao encontro desta tua resposta. Algo que muitas vezes acontece no contexto da investigação artística, não é? Quando é impossível fugir a essa tentativa de explicação. Há até um momento no texto do André Alves em que se fala de uma irritação tua com essa tendência do intelecto para querer fixar ou estabilizar o sentido. Achas que hoje em dia, dentro do sistema académico e institucional da arte, existe por vezes uma pressão excessiva para que a prática artista se torne demasiado explicável e mensurável e perceptível?
I think it is a condition that we see in the global north, in a Eurocentric sense, and also in North America. And I don't know that it's you know, it's certainly not malicious. I think it's a condition that exists in contemporary art in the academic world, where we're being funded by people and institutions that require ways to measure the usefulness of that money. And in a world that's increasingly more difficult again with wars and challenges, you know, refugees and famine and things happening all around us, every bit of money that's being used is being quantified as well. And I think it's somewhat natural that that's happened with art in academic circles. Simultaneously, you know, we have thinkers from the humanities and from areas like science and technology studies that have asked us to really challenge questions of value and who gets to make decisions, how decisions are being made. But it's hard because I think we exist in a, you know, a very vertical patriarchal world where the quantity is efficient in us communicating value. And so it's hard to convince someone that, well, maybe the hand and the body outside of the prefrontal cortex, outside of this illusory picture that we like to create for ourselves, is important too. So yeah, mm-hmm. there is a yeah, I get irritated at times if I'm forced to try to explain meaning or reasons behind the making. I mean, that's like explaining why you like the sunset when it's beautiful that day, and why another day the sunset passes by and you don't think about it.
Yeah. Nós tivemos agora aqui grupo de alunos, e tu chegaste a cruzar-te com eles, que é engraçado porque a certa altura houve aluno que me perguntou, que estávamos a falar dos financiamentos da arte, e porque eles não tinham ideia de, por um lado, eles acham que o valor da arte é altamente especulativo, não é? Portanto, há uma dualidade muito grande entre o preço que eles acham que acaba por ser inacessível para o pouco democrático e, por outro lado, a precariedade com que nós descrevemos, não é? Com que vivemos. E houve um aluno que disse qualquer coisa como, mas realmente é muito difícil de mensurar o benefício que nos traz a arte. O que é que tu achas disto, desta coisa toda? É difícil mensurar. Será que é importante, a essa altura, a academia fazer esse trabalho de conseguir mensurar, de alguma maneira, o valor da arte?
That's a really sophisticated position to take, that simultaneously we exist in a world where the value of art can be extremely high and extremely unpredictable or immeasurable. Yeah. And that seems to be okay. And on the other side, we might find ourselves trying to quantify and secure and pin down why it has that value, especially if we're not in the world. I mean, you know, it why does something that's very, very old have a value to us as humans? Why is an old stone tool something that we put in a museum? You know, why is a piece of art valuable to us? Is it rarity? What is it? We decide. We have now, you know, non-fungible tokens and Bitcoin and these kind of things. And I'm curious about how they might affect the perception of the general public in these things that are, you know, very difficult to measure. You know, and then you have museum collections that buy things that are not material, right? Ephemeral objects. So, you know, how do we assign a value to a thing? And even more difficult, how do we define or assign a value to things that don't have any thingness? Yeah. You know, these are I don't know, these are unanswerable questions, and philosophers try to work on that.
Estamos a entrar aqui num terreno difícil, mas achei piada porque acabei de ser confrontada com essa pergunta e realmente acho que, em certa medida, cada vez temos uma academia mais virada para procurar dar um sentido a tudo isto. Isso, por um lado, é bom, não é? Nós não gostamos, mas quanto mais existir, não é? Quanto mais existirem documentos académicos à volta do que é arte, do que mais valorizada talvez ela seja, mas, por outro lado, esses partilhos não nos interessa, não é?
Well, I think, you know, everything is contextual, right? This idea of, you know, the kind of modernity and its ideas of grandualities, you know, that doesn't stand to reason. It just doesn't hold up when tested. So, you know, what contextualizes the value of something, you know, is an intemporal or a temporal condition, and you know, perhaps, you know, if something is shown in a particular place, if something is seen by a number of people, maybe that gives it a value.
Yeah, of course.
But we can't assign anything inherent to that, right? So you know.
You never know.
Things are contextual, and what's valuable today won't be valuable tomorrow, and what's, you know, I mean, we know this, but we still struggle to accept it in the present.
Yeah.
That we don't know, and if we come to some agreement, I guess if people enjoy artwork, if they enjoy looking at it, if they enjoy having it around, then maybe it gets a value. For some, these are objects of collection and rarity, and you know, a way to trade something that might increase in value. And for others, it's simply they like to have it.
Só usufruir, não é?
Yeah.
Só usufruir.
Yeah.
É isso. Olha, Robert, muito obrigada por este podcast e por teres aceitado o convite para a exposição e para o podcast. A tua exposição é linda. Está cá até dia 2 de Abril, não é? Podem visitá-la. E eu acho que é imperdível, é uma coisa única, diferente do que temos tido. E mais uma vez, um artista a surpreender-me, que é uma maravilha. É uma maravilha quando isso acontece.
Thank you so much. It's really been my pleasure.
Okay. Thank you.